We'll get a few scriptures here this morning. Let's see. John Kern, Ezekiel 22, 30 to 31. David Sanchez, if you can get Ezekiel 22, 29. Edgar Vargas, Genesis 18, 32. Phil, 2 Peter 3, 9 and 10. Trevor, can you get Ezekiel 22, 30? And then we'll be repeating our main text a couple of times, so just keep track for me, guys. Kenny, Ezekiel 22, 30 to 31. Devin, Ezekiel 22, 30 to 31 again. And then Johnny, can you get 2 Timothy 4, 2? And Eli, John 15, 16. Okay. So I was kind of curious, and I called Sharon Allen, and I was asking, she receives from the door directors, she receives a report every month how many people are saved. And I just asked her, I said, this year, just January to July, how many people total have been saved? That's either at an outreach, church service, you know, that sort of thing. And it was actually over 400 people gave their lives to Jesus just since January. And then not counting whoever's been saved in August, probably 30 or 40 people on top of that. And so then the logical question, when you know how many people have been saved, what would the logical question be this morning? Just shout it out.
Where are they?
Where are they? Imagine if we had an additional 400 people in service this morning. We'd be opening up those walls. And so the reason why I begin with that is the question has to be asked, obviously, where are they? Did we do everything in our power to usher these people in? Did we follow up? Did we visit? Do we even know who these people are? Did we pray for them? Did we contact them? The critical dimension this morning, not only for our fellowship and for our church, but for the men in sitting around this table, is God needs men who will be personally fruitful. That's not just praying a prayer with people, but men who are, according to our text, who will be ready to stand in the gap. Men who are ready to follow up, men who are ready to press in for fruitfulness. And I want to teach a lesson this morning entitled Looking for a Man out of Ezekiel 22, 30 and 31. Go ahead and read that.
Okay. And I sought for a man among them that they should build up the wall and stand in the gap before me for the land, that I should not destroy it, but I found none. Therefore I poured out my indignation upon them. I have consumed them with the fire of my wrath. Their own way have I brought upon their heads, saith the Lord Jehovah.
Okay, looking for a man. Let's look firstly this morning at the reality of judgment. The context of our scripture is a picture of the world that we live in today. The background here, you know, the children of Israel, they are living in sin. They've turned their backs on God. They have bowed down to false gods. They've embraced immorality, all sorts of wickedness. And that's a perfect picture of the world we live in today. How wicked our nation has become. And the truth is, we live in a world today of brokenness. People lost in their sin, hopeless. We see this in Ezekiel 22, 29.
The people of the land have used oppressions, committed robbery, and mistreated the poor and needy, and they wrongfully oppress the stranger.
And so this is just emphasizing what Ezekiel is seeing, what is happening in the world in which he lives, and this is what's happening in our world today. So the two outcomes based on what God has said in our text was either judgment or salvation. And so people's lives today, they hang in the balance between these two realities. People without Christ, they are on their way to hell for all eternity. And that should bother us. That should do something inside of us. So also we have to realize the reality of judgment is that God is aware of the wickedness in the world in which we live. Genesis 18:32. Maybe I didn't give that.
No, that's me.
Oh, sorry.
Genesis 18:32. Finally, Abraham said, "Lord, please don't be angry with me if I speak one more time. Suppose only 10 are found there." And the Lord replied, "Then I will not destroy it for the sake of the 10.
So think about this. God is ready, a lot like our text here, he's ready to judge Sodom and Gomorrah. He is going to wipe out this city. He's going to destroy all the people because of sin. And Abraham stands before him, and you know the story for the sake of 50, 45, 35, all the way down. Would you destroy the city for the sake of 10 righteous people? And God says, I will not destroy it. And so we see the heart of God. Sin must be accounted for, but God's view of sin, it has not changed. Yes, he is a merciful and a loving God, but God will not allow sin to go on forever. And also, God leans towards mercy over and over again. That's what we see in this scripture. It shows us the nature of God towards humanity. He is not just a God waiting and ready to smash people, but he wants people to be saved. He wants to extend mercy to people. 2 Peter 3, 9 and 10.
The Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some count slackness, but is long-suffering toward us, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat, both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up.
So we all know verse 9, the Lord is not slack concerning his promises, right? That yes, God is merciful, but God is also balanced. He will not allow sin to go on forever. And so with all of this said, with this understanding this morning, I want to look at looking for a man. Read Ezekiel 22, verse 30.
So I sought a man among them who would make a wall, stand in the gap before me on behalf of the land, that I should not destroy it, but I found none.
So it says, I sought for a man who would stand before me. Think about this. God always uses men in his rescue plan for humanity. God will always use men to reach the lost. Jesus, when he's reaching out to the disciples, he finds a couple of fishermen. Come and follow me. I will make you fishers of men. Right? God is constantly using men and wants them to stand in the gap. This phrase, stand in the gap, it gives the picture of a man standing in places of brokenness and destruction. Catch the imagery. The walls of Jerusalem are completely destroyed. The enemy has full access to harass God's people. It's a mess. And God says, I need men who will be able to stand in the gap. Men who will be able to meet those needs and seeing the needs of other people, being willing to do something about it. This is what God is looking for. And the essence of being a disciple is being a man that will love people. A man that will see the needs of others and be willing to respond. So what that means is you have to have eyes that will see the needs of people around you. You have to have eyes that will see the brokenness, that will see the pain, that will see what people are going through. And so this also points us to the potential of what a man can become. I look around this table, I look at the men seated here this morning, I see men with great potential. What God can do in your life and through your life. is absolutely incredible. That God would say, I want to use you to help save people from an eternity of judgment. Think about how profound that is. We can do a lot of different things with our lives. We can aim our lives at a lot of different things and be occupied with a lot of different things. But God says, I'm looking for a man. I'm looking for a man who will stand in the gap. But the reality also in our text is that the man cannot be found. There's a missing dimension in disciples today. Ezekiel 22, 30 to 31.
I look for a man among them who would build up the wall and stand before me in the gap. On behalf of the land, so I would not destroy it. But I found no one. So I poured out my wrath on them and consumed them by my fiery anger, bringing down on their own heads all they have done.
So our text points out the problem. God is looking for a man. He finds none. And the response is judgment. So number one, we can have disciples that are not fruitful. It is the job of every disciple to be personally involved with people, actively following up and actively working with new converts. You know, there can be things that men adopt and just sort of build into their thinking. Follow-up is a concert director's job. Think about it. Between Pastor Matt and Anthony, you know, we've probably had over 1,000 people saved just in the past year and a half alone. How is it possible that two men, with everything else they have to do, how is it possible that they could effectively follow up on that many people? The answer is, it's not possible. Follow-up is pastor's job. Pastor Greg is in Holland right now preaching a conference. Do you think he took a stack of convert cards with him? No. It's a seasoned saint's job. It's the altar call preacher's job. I'll start doing that when I go up the discipleship ladder. That's wrong. These are mentalities that will hurt you in the long run. The second thing is that disciples, they can be focused on the wrong things. What are you focused on when you come to church? This morning, you're going to go home, get ready for church, bring your family back. You walk into the building. What are you focused on? Are you aware of new people? When visitors walk in, we make it really easy. We give all of our visitors a bright blue bag. Do you know they're here? Do you know last Sunday we had, I believe, 43 visitors in church?
Wow.
How many of them did you meet last Sunday? How many of them did you talk to? Do you know their names? Where are they from? Why are they in church? Where did they come from? Was it their first time being in a church? Were they saved? I met a man, I actually prayed with him last Sunday morning. He was probably in his mid-70s. You know, this couple looked like the average older church shoppers, right? Older couple, just bouncing around. Maybe they just wanted to scratch a religious itch, right? From the exterior, that's what it looked like. But this man raised his hand to get saved that morning. I went down with him. I prayed with him, and he told me, he said, I've been an alcoholic for 20 years. He said, I used to be involved in AA. I was avid, 15 years sober. He's like, one day I thought, what harm could one cocktail bring to my life? He said, I've been saved for a while. One drink. What's the problem with one drink? He said, that sent my life down a spiral. 20 years an alcoholic. But God met with him on Sunday. We could have looked at him and been like, shirt shopper, probably not serious. But he was there. They came into our building, got saved. This man's going to get baptized tonight. My point in saying that is how many more people fall through the cracks simply because we assume, simply because we don't see them, we don't make the effort, we think somebody else is going to do it. There's also, disciples can be missing in action. If you are a disciple and you are not actively working with new converts, that's a serious problem. God looked for a man who would stand in the gap, and he found no man. But the other element of our text that has to be said is that God's response of judgment is the result of men missing in action. People being judged was avoidable. Because in our text, God tells us, I don't want to judge. I don't want to pour out my wrath. I'm looking for a man who will stand in the gap, but I found no one. Do the needs of other people bother you? Do you notice new people in church? Do you know who's missing? And notice in our text, it says, I sought for a man among them who would stand in the gap. It was among men that were already there. It wasn't like God was looking out on just a vast empty field. I don't see anybody. There's nobody out there. It says he looked for a man among the people, and he found no one. No one was willing to step forward. No one was willing to do whatever it took. Real talk this morning, our church will not survive without disciples being fruitful and replicating themselves. You want to go out. You want to preach someday. You want to be a pioneer. If disciples are not replicating themselves, we will have no one to send. In 1 or 2 years from today, how many disciples will be in church pursuing ministry because of you? We can say it in a different way. In the past 5 to 10 years, how many men are in church today because of you? Men that want to be discipled. Men that want to do the will of God. You see, personal fruitfulness must go from being a concept and a theory to a personal reality. I would be willing to bet most of us men that are regularly praying, laying hold of God, have said the past couple of weeks, God, give us fruit. I've prayed that. Most of us have. God, we want to be fruitful. God, give us people. What you see, God brings them in. Think about that. 6 months, 400 people have been saved. There's your fruit. And then what? You see, we cannot pray, God give us fruit, if we cannot care for the fruit that God gives us. Thirdly, we need to understand that ministry magnifies. You become a larger version of yourself wherever you go. I'm not talking physically. I'm talking spiritually. If you are not fruitful today, we do not sprinkle you with magic fairy dust when you get sent out and then all of a sudden you're fruitful. These things have to be worked out here. They have to be worked out as a disciple. You see, the church grows by disciples being personally fruitful. Men who want to pastor someday and are not fruitful, that's a contradiction. If you are not fruitful here, how will you be fruitful out there? In our church, when you have resources, you have, I think, 6 church vans. So getting the people to church is not a problem. You have men willing to support you, willing to pay for meals, men willing to do whatever it takes. These things have to be worked out here. So let's look at, finally, being the man. First of all, let's examine practical steps to fruitfulness outside of the church. Number one, be involved in corporate evangelism. This is not just an advertising campaign. You know, think of the amount of trees that we have decimated in flyers. It's not just handing out flyers. That's not evangelism. While it might be important, people need to know about events, but that's not evangelism. Evangelism is making Jesus known to people. It's sharing your testimony, confronting people with their sin. That's evangelism. And it's not just being involved in corporate evangelism that's important. You need to be involved in personal evangelism. 2 Timothy 4:2.
It says, preach the word. Be ready in season and out of season. Convince, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and teaching.
Be ready at any time, in any arena of life. When my wife and I were pioneering in Denver, I can remember, and it was the same feeling when we were in 29, but it was like every outing was an outreach. We saw people at the store. We saw people at the gas station or the bank or in the park, and we would say, there's the next couple coming to church. There's my next disciple. That's going to be the first couple we launch into ministry. They're going to be our first missionaries. In church this morning, do we view people the same way? So we also have practical steps to fruitfulness inside the church. You have to have eyes for the visitor. You have to have eyes for people that are walking into our church for the fruit that God is giving us. Be ready to make a connection. This morning, every disciple needs to be engaged with new people. Who are they? Where are they from? Obviously, this is not an interrogation. You're showing them that you actually care about them. They came into our church. Could that have been seeing the building, online advertising, flyers, outreach, friend from work, somebody they met from the church invited them? Who knows? You'll never know unless you ask them, unless you engage with them. Excuse me. The point is, no visitor should feel alone or unconnected. Maybe invite them to sit with you during service. Like a couple or a family that comes into church, they've never been here before. And our ushers, they do a great job. But how much more effective would it be if you approach them and say, build a connection, build a bridge? Would you guys want to sit with us this morning? Now there's a connection. Now they don't feel like outsiders. You see, we cannot get so absorbed with our own circle of friends, our own clique, our own tasks, and miss the whole point of this. I've got my ministry, I've got my job, I've got this, I'm doing this, and going, what's the point? The point is people. We can get wrapped up sometimes in the details of everything that we are responsible for as disciples, and yet miss the whole point of discipleship. It's loving people, it's caring for people. You have to have eyes for the visitor. That's something we can all do this morning. Secondly, it involves the altar call. Last time I preached, I had to announce multiple times, I need somebody to help me pray with this person that responded. That should never happen. When we have an altar call and you have two or three guys stand up and go to the back, they were not specifically selected. And they did not become the chosen ones. Like they are the only ones allowed to pray with people. You know why they stand up and they go to the back when the altar call is happening in church? They're pointing out who's raising their hands. They're not the only ones allowed to pray for people. Every single disciple in this place should be actively involved, not only with visitors, but when people raise their hands to get saved, they should never have to walk down to the altar by themselves. They should never have to kneel down at the steps and just kind of hang out there for a while pastors begging men, please come and pray with them. Please, they're by themselves. For the love of God, pray with them. We're looking around. They're doing it. Just get up. Pray with the people. Walk them down. Think of how terrible. This is so basic, gentlemen. We are totally used to the liturgy of our services. We know what's going to happen. Pastor is going to pull an altar call. Hands are going to be lifted. People are going to go down and pray. Everybody else is going to go down and pray. For a visitor, they have no idea what's going on. The fact that they lifted their hands and now they're willing to stand up in front of 700 or 800 people, walk down to the front, kneel down, now what's supposed to happen? How much better would it be if men open their eyes, see who lifts their hands, approach them before pastor says, come down to the front, and be ready to go with them? Give them the courage to go down and pray. You build a connection. You build a bridge with that person. You have to be aware. You cannot be so consumed with your own little world where we miss the whole point of why we're doing any of this. God, give us fruit. Hands are lifted. Nobody wants to go down and pray with them. That cannot happen. You have to be aware of it. Don't assume somebody else will do it. So those are practical steps of fruitfulness inside the church. And I want to close this morning. I want to look at a supernatural dimension. Read John 15, 16.
You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit and that your fruit should abide. And that whatever you ask in the Father in my name, he will give it to you.
Saving lost people is God's idea, not ours. And if we're not careful, church can de-evolve into a social program. Going to church, going to Serious Men, going on outreach because it's just the socially acceptable thing to do. But God says, you didn't choose me. I chose you. I appointed you to be fruitful, that your fruit should remain. This is God's promise. This is God's guarantee. And this is how our text begins. God looking for a man that would stand in the gap. Who will it be this morning? As God looks out over our congregation, people that have spent a lifetime in sin, God says, I want to save them so bad. But he's looking for a man. You see, God makes the miracle possible when we as men do our part and stand in the gap. That is looking for a man. That's all I have this morning. We're going to open it up for a time of questions. If that stirs anything in you, something you want to ask, something you want to know. Yep, Greg. What's the question?
For altar call, going up to altar call with married people, should you be here like 6 months before you go to that, or is there something like that? Some way
of serving. Oh, no, I mean, just use wisdom, man. I think just use wisdom, especially if it's like a friend, like somebody you brought to church. You should be the first one on them, right? But yeah, just use wisdom. David?
Can you give us some practical suggestions with how to work with somebody after you pray with them?
Yeah. So if it's somebody that you've never met before, you're talking to them right away, right after service, why not invite them out for a meal? Hey, let's go to lunch this morning. People are going to get saved this morning after our service. Make contact with them. That it's not such a terrible inconvenience to simply, hey, we're going to go eat something anyway. Why don't you come with us? That's one idea. Take them out for coffee. Invite them over to your house. It's just caring for people. You see, Jesus, you know, the Pharisees had a huge issue with him eating with sinners and tax collectors. And what was he doing? He was building relationships with them because he cared about them, right? And people, think of what sin does to the human personality. It makes us jaded and bitter. People that come into church and it's like, okay, I'll pray, but then it's like, does anybody care about me? Does anybody want, you know, to see me actually make it in this? The biggest thing is just show people that you love them, that you care about them. And that could be as simple as remembering them. I mean, maybe pay them a visit if they tell you where they live. Maybe just offer, hey, can I come to your house and just pray for you? Right? I mean, it's the language of relationship. That's what we have to start that. I think Anthony was telling me the other day with Tim and Cassandra, he said it was, what, a month or 2 months? You had them over to your house every couple days for a meal? Just to, you know, talk to them, just to fellowship with them, build relationship, talk them off the edge if they needed to be talked off the edge. And now Tim wants to preach the gospel. But that's not just a one-off. That's not just a special case. How many more men could be right where he is? And it cost Anthony a little bit of money for extra food, but a little bit of extra food is totally worth it when it makes the difference between eternity. So, that, David, yeah, to answer your question, that's you just got to care about people. Other questions?
Should we follow up on backsiders like new converts?
Backsliders that get saved, that rededicate their lives? Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, whether they've been backslidden for a few months or a few years, they still need that connection. And I would say, in many cases, we need to focus on them to an even greater degree. Because what does a backslider feel when they come back to church and they get saved? I've known the truth. I knew all of this and I walked away from it. They would feel even more like an outsider. So yeah, follow up on all of them. Every disciple, I can remember when I was, right before I was door director, it was like almost every single guy, and some of the other guys here this morning can relate with this, it was like we were all working with somebody. Some of us, multiple different couples, multiple different families at different levels, different stages. They're at the text and respond stage, which is great. They're at the want to come to church every other Sunday, which is great. We're all working with people at different levels. And this is what needs to happen. This is part of discipleship. It's not just writing sermons and doing outreaches and preaching altar calls. It's people. And so that I would challenge you guys. Everybody needs to be aware of this. Be thinking about this. Anthony is our concert director. He has lists of names and people that we can be working with. But even beyond that, it starts this morning. It starts with our morning service. Visitors that walk in, do you know who they are? That's where it begins. But yeah, we're backsliders totally. Yeah, follow up. They might get it a lot faster, I would hope. They're gonna get on board with what we do and catch a vision for what we're doing a lot faster. But we should care about them as well. We should follow up with them as well.
Eli. I've had people in the past that I felt like I could get them to come to church through sort of constant pressure and babysitting. And I understand you have to be aggressive in inviting people and following up at first. Do you have a sense of that at some point, do you, if it doesn't seem like they're converted or there's a hunger for God birthed in them, do you have a sense of when it becomes more of a, I'm trying to force something that this person is just not really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, of course, but we have to at least give them a chance. If we don't even know their names, we have not given them a fair shake. Like it has to start with just knowing these people, and trying to build that bridge and build that relationship. Obviously, you get a feel, and I think this is the problem: is many men we are imbalanced, right? It's like if I focus on this person and I have an inkling that maybe they're not as committed as they should be, and I've talked to them for about 5 minutes. Wow, they're probably just religious. Oh, they're not going to get it. They're not really a convert. It's like you got to build some kind of a bridge with them first. You got to build some kind of a, and I get it. Like this morning, we're going to have religious people that come into our service that have no intention of doing what we do or being who we are. But better to actually communicate with them and talk to them and figure that out. Then you move along. But if we come to conclusions before we even know who these people are, the fruit dies on the vine. So, yeah, you feel that out. But that's the beautiful thing about ministry. And that's a beautiful thing about being a disciple in Prescott, is working with people, you can work through those things. It's like, man, I texted them 6,000 times and they responded with a one-letter answer in 6 months, and Pastor, you think I should really be spending a lot of time? Obviously, I'm using an extreme example, but like, those things, those are very healthy. You work those things out. And I would challenge you guys, it's not just, oh, I'm working with this one person. Work with people. Know who's going to new converts class. Build relationships with them. Because the person I pray with might not jive on me, but they would get along great with somebody else. And that's the power of what we do. It's like, no, my guy, don't talk to them. What did you say to them? No, you're not allowed. No, get away. Shoot. It's true. We want these people to make it to heaven.
Yes.
Okay? If you have a gold star convert, like, yeah, we all want that. We want the convert that's just like, man, they're doing so good. But my gosh, the goal is to see them into heaven. And if they get along better with somebody else, that's great. I hope you make it, right? So you just have to, you have to focus on that. You have to have eyes for that. So, yeah, sensitivity comes in time. You just have to work that through. Somebody else, Trevor.
So like, there's these kids that are wanting to like reach out to them. What would you say is the practicality of trying to get them to spend time with the church youth versus trying to just spend time like within their friend group? Like, would I go with like a friend of mine, or would I go with me? Like, just how would you?
Well, you gotta meet with people on their level. And obviously what we're talking about is people coming into church, outreach, people that show signs of life, right? If they're interested in Jesus, interested in the church, you know, there's a certain dynamic as believers get older, our group of unsaved friends gets smaller and smaller and smaller until the only friends that we really have are friends inside the church. Right? So, you know, you just got to guard your heart, be careful where you're at. I would say go with somebody else. You don't want to put yourself in a bad situation. You know, but ultimately, yeah, you build bridges with people. Pastor Greg talks about a guy that he was following up on who I think his girlfriend or wife got saved. And he said, yeah, this guy was really into tennis. And Pastor Greg's like, I'm not into tennis, but I want this guy to make it. So he spent, I don't know, a few months going and playing tennis, you know, constantly, until finally the guy got the revelation and wanted to live for God. You know, but the starting point is people that show signs of life. If you just see a group of people out there, evangelize, try and get a response, try and get them to pray, try and get them to, you know, make a decision, You know, but then after that, you'll have to just feel that out. But protect yourself. Be aware of that. Sometimes influences can have a negative effect on you, but, you know, there are plenty, like I said, 400 plus people that got saved in the past 6 months. We've got plenty to choose from people who have already made a decision. So it just starts, that's where it starts. So, somebody else. Johnny.
What do you mean when your friends are just in church?
So the idea is that before you get saved, the majority of your friendships are unsaved sinners, right? Before you got saved, the majority of people you knew and hung out with were people like you, unsaved sinners. After you get saved, as time goes on, your circle of saved friends gets bigger and your circle of unsaved friends gets smaller. And why do you think that is? Right. Common interests, right? The things that I was involved in and interested in before I got saved are completely different now that I'm saved. Your friends that want to hang out and go get drunk, I don't want to do that because I'm a Christian now, right? And so there's going to be a natural distance. And as time goes on, eventually most of your relationships, if it's not like work relationships or whatever, most of your personal friendships and people that you hang out with are people from church. So that's why evangelism is so important. It puts you in contact with sinners, like, immediately. That's what I meant by that.
That actually reminds me, I've seen a lot more people come in and get saved through relationships than through just cold witness on outreach, which, not that we, obviously they're balanced, but it made me think when pioneering, did you ever do anything to find a place, you know, outside of just your work, where you could make some sort of friendship or connection?
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether it's letting your kids play Little League or going to a school meeting or something, you know?
Yeah, my boys were too young for Little League and when we were pioneering, but we built relationships with our neighbors. My wife, she baked lots of different things, and so we would regularly, you know, we had an Ethiopian family that lived two houses down from us. We would always bring them food. They would always bring us food. We would play with their kids. Their kids would play with ours. And, it's, you know, and so you build relationships that way.
Good to look for some of those forums.
You know, and that's the thing. You don't want to get too hung up on hobbies like, you know, miniature boat building clubs and things. I have no time to write a sermon, but by golly, I met Hank at my boat building club. Like, it's probably an imbalance there too. But the point is, you just have to have eyes for people around you. People at work, people that you meet. You know, I prayed for a lady at a gas station who had terrible arthritis in her hands. And it was just like, she was struggling with the pump and asked me for some help. And, you know, I helped her and then prayed for her. She got healed. But it's just, have eyes for that. No, all I'm doing is getting gas and then I'm going.
Yeah.
It's just have to look up. You just have to look around. There's needs everywhere. But you just have to have eyes for it. And know that God wants to meet these people, but he uses us to do it. So, yeah. Somebody else? Other questions? So I'll just leave it at this. It's attainable, guys. This isn't some innocuous, like, mysterious, ethereal thing that someday I'll achieve it. You can put it into practice this morning. You know, you can have eyes for the visitors this morning on outreach, evangelism, what you're doing for God. It's about people. So just keep that in mind. Anyway. That's all I've got. Thank you, guys.